So the New Zealand All Blacks, they are one of, if not the greatest sports club of all time. They're famous not just for their extraordinary winning record, but the value they place on character. And today, we get to talk with not just one of the greatest All Blacks, but one of the greatest rugby players of all time, Sean Fitzpatrick. He set a world record, 63 consecutive appearances for New Zealand. Sean won the first World Cup in 1987. And he didn't retire until 1997. Now, in the next two episodes, we'll be talking with him about the legacy of the All Blacks and the parts he has played in rebuilding the team and sustaining this extraordinary culture. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. My name is JP Nurbin, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nate Sanderson. The mission of this podcast is to help coaches build better team cultures and become better leaders and be better people. You can get the notes to this in every episode by subscribing to our newsletter at tocculture.com, where you also can learn more about our online courses and one-on-one coaching program for coaches. Now let's get right into our conversation with Sean Fitzpatrick. All right, Sean, welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. And you're the first All Black I've ever talked to. I'm just going to be fully transparent about that. Though I did get to witness my first international rugby match in 2021, I got to watch Ireland beat you're All Blacks in the Aviva here in Dublin, where I live. But we'll start with this today. There's so much, you know, hype around the All Blacks. They're even in America, you know, people know who they are. They may not know much about rugby, but they know about the All Blacks. What did that mean to you? You know, even what does it mean to you to even today to have played for one of the greatest, if not the greatest, sports team of all time?
You know, I feel very honoured. We say we play for the greatest club in the world. To you know, represent the All Blacks. It's a organisation that we feel very privileged to have belonged to have played for. I'm very honoured. Massive responsibility that I loved. I had 11 years and, you know, shaped my life, changed my life. And I love now being a fan of the All Blacks because that's what I am. Although you know I played for the All Blacks for a number of years and love that. I'm actually enjoying being a fan more than I was when I was a player, because you know obviously it's just all encompassing, and we'll get into that in terms of you know what being an All Black's all about. But it's all encompassing, dominates your life. And now to sit back, having done what I did, and now just to be a real enthusiast. I love, you know, this week I'm heading down to Cardiff to watch them play against the Welsh, which I can't wait. And then, you know, we've got Scotland the week after, and then we've got, you know, England here at Twickenham. So a big few weeks coming up for the All Blacks.
Well, there's so much of your story and as captain, and even now in your role of keeping that legacy, you know, intact, that we want to unpack. But I actually want to start kind of how you got your start with the team, and one of those impactful stories that I remember reading about in Winning Matters. And that, you know, is connected to a story you shared there about Andy Hayden gave you some pretty tough feedback early on in your day, which I found was interesting, because I often think of like a great culture and onboarding players. You're going to have some guy that's going to have a warm, fuzzy talk, and he's going to, you know, mentor you. And I don't know if you could tell that story of some of the feedback that he gave you in one of those earlier training sessions, and just really what that did for you as a player and how it impacted, you know, really your whole career.
It was just a tough love, and it's a classic example of, you know, an older member of the All Blacks, as he was in those days, just gave me some tough love. Basically, I wasn't very good at what I was doing. I thought I was better than what I was, and little did I know I couldn't throw the ball in very well, which was, you know, one of the main jobs that I had to do. And he literally said, go away, and until you learn how to throw the ball in properly, you're not going to play, basically. And I thought it was pretty tough at the time. But ultimately, it was the making of me. And, you know, I think we get a bit carried away in terms of negative feedback. There's no such thing as negative feedback. You know, I could have taken that on board as being negative feedback, where there's no such thing. All he was wanting was me to be better than I was, and me being better made the team better. So I really get annoyed when I hear people giving so-called negative feedback and people not being able to take negative feedback. If you approach it as positive feedback, it's only helping you. And in the All Blacks, we need everyone to be the best at what they do. And that's all Andy wanted from me. It didn't feel right at the time. You know, I was 18 years old. And, you know, it took me 2 or 3 years to get back in the team. But luckily I stuck at it. It would have been quite easy just to walk away, actually. But I don't like this. I don't like that feedback. I'm going to go and play for somebody else, or I'm going to change my position because I can't throw the ball. Which ultimately would have been the wrong decision.
I think it's interesting because I think you're right on. You know, feedback can be a touchy subject sometimes, you know, and a lot of our audience is high school coaches, and, you know, in a lot of ways we're dealing with kids where, quite frankly, we're afraid to say the wrong thing because they will turn tail and run, or they'll go play another sport or do something else. So in your experience as a player, you know, we'll get into your captaincy a little bit later too, but what was that just communication expectation as part of being on the All Blacks? Because I would imagine that feedback's not always delivered with candies and roses, that there is an expectation that truth will be told for the betterment of the team. What was that like for you as a player as you went on?
Yeah, I think, Nate, it's changed now in terms of, you know, the feedback we got 30 years ago was delivered differently than it's delivered today, as you just said, in terms of the feedback to the young kids. It's got to be different, and that's the way sport is today. So it's the way that you receive that, and that hasn't changed. And we all know that, you know, I could tell you straight away, the coach that pushed the right buttons for me, I could tell you who he is right now, and he still does that. Even now, as a you know, nearly 60 years old, he's nearly 80 years old, we're still best of mates, and he knows how to press my buttons. Where some coaches just didn't press my buttons, and I just didn't. Whatever feedback they gave me, it either didn't have the desired result, or it took us time to work out the way I received his feedback and the feedback he gave me. And, you know, I've got an example of that where, you know, a coach came in to coach the All Blacks who didn't really like me. And he was actually had a good reason not to like me, because I've become a little bit arrogant, taken my position for granted, and he had to change that. And it was, once again, tough love. And if I hadn't have changed, I wouldn't have been in the All Blacks. And luckily for me, I changed. Some of my mates didn't change, and they never played for the All Blacks again.
Yeah, I'm curious. You made some adjustments, obviously, from one coach to the next, right? I'm curious if you could share a little bit about that initial coach that you had, or the coach that you said is you have that great relationship with still. Who is that coach? And did you see that coach communication style? Was it one for all, or, you know, it was, you know, just what made him special? Not just for you, but for the whole team.
Yeah. So his name was John Hart, and he basically found me when I was 18, 19 years old, and he was the one that got rid of me. He said, "Don't come back. You come back when you learn how to throw the ball in. You've controlled your discipline on the field until you don't give away penalties, blah, 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 blah." He said, "I'm not going to pick you." And that was literally the Andy Hayden, John Hart team who moved me aside. And then we had him at the World Cup in 87. And he brought me back into Auckland. And as I said to Nate, he was the one that he knew which buttons to press for me, what got me going, what didn't get me going. And then he left the All Blacks, and we had a guy called Laurie Mains who came in from the deep south who wanted to change the attitude of the team. And that was a case of getting rid of certain people. and changed the way we trained. We trained differently than I'd ever trained. We got as fit as we'd ever been. And ultimately, there was no one else to be captain, and that's, and we'll get onto the captaincy shortly, but he was literally forced, as a hand was forced to pick me as captain. But we took, I reckon, probably a year to 18 months before we sort of actually gelled with each other, which is quite strange to have a captain and a coach not really getting on. It took us a while, but it was a great learning curve for me. And ultimately, he did the job and created a wonderful All Black team. And it was almost a change, and I know once again we'll get into this, but it was almost a change in the way people selected teams. And you've read, I'm sure you've read the sort of the All Black leadership books, and he was the one that sort of said, oh, I want to pick the right people first. He said, they don't need to be the best players. He said, because I will turn them into great All Blacks. But you need to have the right people on the bus first. And he said, and that's how we created the saying, basically. You know, good people make great All Blacks.
There's so much to unpack there. One question I want to ask is, let's just focus in on that character piece there. There's kind of this paradox or this juxtaposition within the All Blacks, which is you are about winning. Winning matters is the title of your book, and it's the expectation all the time. At the same time, you guys value character. And I think oftentimes in the sports world, we feel like it has to be one or the other. You have to pick, oh, we got to go the character people, or we got to sacrifice character so we can get these guys that can help us win. How does the All Blacks do both?
I think now we went through that pain initially. And, you know, the early 90s, sort of 92, 93, we were losing games because, you know, we were still learning as a young team, a young captain. And we had to take some pain. And, you know, in those early days, in early 90s, late 80s, we had one test All Blacks. People that would play one test of the All Blacks and then they'd be gone. Because we weren't picking the right people initially. We were picking a standout player who played one unbelievable trial match or one unbelievable game where he had to be in the All Blacks without us sort of analysing what sort of person he was. And now we don't get one test All Blacks. We get guys that play 30, 40, 50, 100 test matches because the sort of people that we don't want, they don't get to first base. And I'm talking about the pathway through from sort of 18, 19, 20-year-olds. That pathway has created the right people. You've mentioned culture probably 30 times since I've spoken to you in the last 20 minutes. We don't talk about culture because culture is a given. And, you know, honesty, integrity, respect, being the best you can, the legacy of the jersey, where we came from, that's all a given. We shouldn't need to talk about it.
But you have one that has such deep roots, you know, and it is a special culture, whether you use that word or not. It is special. When you started playing there, before you became captain, because I want to jump into that captaincy in a second, but before you became captain, you know, how did players onboard you to the standards, the way that you do things? What was that process of bringing you within the team?
Yes, well, it's a responsibility. It's, you know, when you've mentioned winning a few times, that for us is, I love saying, I expect now, being a fan, I expect the All Blacks to win. I love that. Every time we play, we're expected to win. And long may that continue. And that creates a pressure. It's a massive responsibility. But I love that. Long may that continue. If we lose that, we're gonna accept losing. So, you know, and the All Blacks, you have to live in New Zealand to play for the All Blacks. The guys that play for the All Blacks could probably earn two or three times more money if they played somewhere else in the world. But why do they stay in New Zealand? Because they want to wear the All Black jersey. So for us, onboarding, we don't talk about onboarding, but you know the history of the All Blacks. We know our identity. We know where we came from. We know the people that have gone before us. And you need to know that. And in an organization, in a place like even Laureus, we're only 22 years old, but everyone who joins our organization knows where we started. In Monaco in 2000, Nelson Mandela came to our first awards. You know, the first All Black captain, you know, Dave Gallagher from Donegal in Ireland, died at Passchendaele in the First World War at the age of 43, fought in the Boer War in the late 1890s. You know, so we know our identity. And when you want to create a successful environment, the people in your organisation need to know their identity. Everyone who plays for the All Blacks, they know where we came from. They know the people that have gone before them. And they know the responsibility that they have now that they have the jersey.
What if your coach taking over a program, a team that doesn't have this storied tradition? You know, do you have any recommendations? And I know you do some consulting with businesses and stuff. So what recommendations do you have for those individuals?
But everyone has an identity. If you started a business tomorrow, you've got an identity straight away. Where did it start? You know, as I said, we're only 22 years old at Laureus, but we have a huge history. You know, in terms of the people that have been involved in the organisation, what we're trying to do, what's our ultimate goal, where we're trying to get to, and then you'll decide who you want to be part of it. What sort of person do you want in your organisation? And I say to people that there's no reason why you can't be the All Blacks of your industry. But the only problem is it's hard work. It's hard work winning. It's hard work being the best you can be. You know, as you guys, I'm not telling you anything new. You know, there's for us as All Blacks, there's two key ingredients to our success over the years. The first one is we prepare better than anyone else. Preparation is key. But with that degree of preparation comes sacrifice, which is the second ingredient. And most people don't like sacrifice. We love sacrifice. You know, people say to me, do you miss not playing for the All Blacks? I said, no. I said, I had 12 years or 11 years playing for the All Blacks. But it took everything out of me. Because it was the only thing in my life that mattered was being the best All Black I could be. So, huge sacrifice. But to qualify that, I made sure I surrounded myself with the right people. You know, girlfriend, wife, children. They were all so supportive because they knew that rugby was the most important thing in my life. Playing for the All Blacks was number one. So the family needed to understand that. We all needed to buy into it. And then that made us powerful. And if you get everyone in your organisation with those work ethics, no one's going to beat you. So you need to make sure that you have those two key ingredients. And then to qualify that, you need to have the support network around you. You know, that I'm going to be away 180 days this year. I'm going to miss the first day of school. I'm going to miss the birth of my first child or second child. And if you're prepared to sacrifice that, you make it bloody worthwhile doing what you're doing.
Well, I think one thing that's led to kind of this lasting success for the All Blacks, too, you talked about people understanding the history before they're even on the team. And it's kind of the proliferation of the narrative, right, of the history and of certain teams and of certain players and certain captains along the way. And I listened to you tell a story, and I don't remember what interview it was in, but as we were just doing some background about even just connecting to people, like when you're going to play, and you had told a story about being assigned to go meet with a family and, you know, have a picnic with a family and just doing those kind of connective things to be able to spread what it means to be an All Black. I don't know if you can talk a little bit about the importance of that connection to community at the same time.
I think the story you're referring to is in the World Cup in 87. We played, you know, everyone has this idea that the All Blacks professional sports teams stay in the flashiest hotels and travel everywhere in business class and all that. In 87, we were trying to reconnect with the community in New Zealand because there'd been reasons why that we'd sort of drifted away. So after one of our games in the World Cup, it was our last pool game, we went to our coach, was a guy called Brian Lahore, who was a farmer from the Wairarapa. And we played our last pool game in Wellington. Thought we were heading off to Christchurch to play the quarterfinal against Scotland. And he said, oh, no, we're going to go over to my home in the Wire Wrapper to have a beer and have a Sunday lunch with the locals. We thought, oh, yeah, great. What a lovely idea. So I hopped on the bus over the hill, dirt roads, and we went to this beautiful pub just outside Ekatahuna, I think it was. And we walk in there, and as we're going in there, there's all these trucks parked outside with bales of hay, barking dogs, sheep everywhere. And we walk into the pub, and it's full of mums and dads and kids. And we sat there, and they played a bit of music and sang a few songs and had a few beers. And then all of a sudden, the coach stood up, and he said, right, boys, he said, change of plan. He said, we're going to be billeted. Which means Fitzpatrick and Lowe, you're going to stay with the Hastings family down the road there. So we got billeted, which was brilliant. So we hopped into the truck and trundled off down the road. But it was a way of us connecting back, you know, to the roots where we came from, which I think is so important that we realise, you know, where you came from. We have a great thing in the All Blacks now where they have a club night. On the Tuesday night of a test match, they have a couple of beers. But you have to wear your club jersey from where you started. And it's just once again, just making you realise that the community game is really important. It's where you came from. And you make sure that you never forget that.
You've had some incredible rituals, traditions, language that's been created that I think help to strengthen that identity for sure. You mentioned earlier about a period in the 90s where the All Blacks lost their way. And there's a great story in your book about how you and a few others tried to bring them back by writing a little, what's called, I guess, the Little Black Book. I was wondering if you could tell a little bit about that story because it's something that has always resonated with me.
It was actually after I finished JP, actually.
Yep.
And When quite a few of us retired in sort of 98, and the All Blacks went through a really difficult period, lost a few games, and it was literally 99 we got knocked out of the World Cup, and it was a little black book that a number of the older guys created, and it's literally a little black book with all our sayings in it, you know, don't be good, be great, once an All Black, always an All Black, you know, all these sayings that are just written on one page, and then there'll be a couple of stories about some of our great teams through the years. And just to remind you who you are, what you are, the people have gone before you. It's got your number embroidered on the front, your All Black number, your name, and it gets updated every sort of generation, whether that be every 4 years, 5 years, the current team. We'll add to it because, you know, although we're very old school and we have a lot of very old values, the game is evolving and the professional game's changing the way we do things. And as long as we sort of, you know, keep evolving, you know, as we say, the All Blacks, you know, the way we're doing it yesterday is not good enough to win tomorrow, which is so true.
How do you get language to stick? I think one of the things I see coaches try to do is they try to come up with catchy slogans. They might put them on the wall and then it kind of disappears. Like from your experience, I mean, the All Blacks seem to be so good at this. What's the key to help making language like that stick? You know, is it just that, you know, was it the captains, the coaches are constantly referring back to this? Because I think like this is the thing coaches try to do all the time is they come up with a slogan, but it doesn't ever seems to really become, you know, integral part of who they are.
We this is just normal for us. All these sayings we have, you know, don't be good, be great, you know, once an All Black, always an All Black, prepare as if you're number two, you need to be arrogant to be successful, believe it on the field, don't take it out of the office, in other words. It's probably just because I try to live, you know, even now I'm 59 years old, you know, I was so privileged to have, you know, an upbringing from a wonderful mum and dad that lived all those values, the honesty and the humility. You know, it's I don't know if it's a New Zealand way or it's just the way we live. And it shouldn't be any different, you know. You shouldn't need to be trying to ingrain these into people. They should just be ingrained into you. You know, when I wrote that book, Winning Matters, there was five key messages came out of it, which I didn't know had been ingrained into me as a kid in the first 20 years of my life. You know, enjoy yourself, play a team sport, everyone is equal. You know, treat everyone as an equal. Why am I different? You know, I was an All Black captain. I'm no different to you guys. You know, just because I had a title as an All Black captain. You know, get out of bed every morning with that attitude. I'm going to be better. You know, which is a good. You know, when I turn up at work, when I turn up here or whatever, I want to make a difference. And that's as an All Black, as a sports person, as a person. That's what a great attitude. I want to make a difference. And how am I going to make a difference? A positive change, you know? And then I think our last one, which is our mantra, is be the best you can be. Why wouldn't people want to be the best they can be? And then ultimately, when you are the best you can be, you'll then have to make the decision whether I'm good enough. Because maybe I'm not good enough to be a cricketer, or maybe I'm not good enough to be an NFL player. Or an All Black, or a rugby player. Maybe I need to go and try something else. Or maybe I've just got a bit arrogant or fat and lazy, taking my position for granted. So, but unless you challenge yourself like that, you're not gonna realize.
Okay, we're gonna take a pause in our conversation with Sean Fitzpatrick. We'll be back next episode with Sean to discuss the role of the captain, the relationship between the captain and the coach, and some of the impactful work he is doing in the world through sport as chairman of the organization, Laureus. Thanks for listening in to today's podcast. Be sure to subscribe if you don't already.